A warm welcome to a new podcast from Sour Vinegar and Other Flavors. Today with us, Jan van der Spoel. Thanks for being with us, Jan. Hello.
Yes. Hi, Ingo. Thank you very much for having me.
And of course, with us is not only Ingo, it's also Christian. Hi, Christian.
Hello, hello.
So you probably recognized it. Today our podcast is in English. So Jan is located in the Netherlands, and as our Dutch is not as good, even if we are close to the Dutch border, but so we aligned to do it in English. So
me as well, I'm also not that good in this way.
No.
So let's say today is the topic from management to trusted leadership, I would say. And for us in our business, when you work with your colleagues, it's a very important topic because of trust is a very essential for work as a team, as a group. And to start, the first question to you, Jan, how you would define a trusted leader? So what is essential for you in this way?
The first thing you have to think about is the different, what is leadership? What is a leader? Because we tend to throw managing and leading onto one big pile. And when we talk about leadership aspects and management aspects, we confuse them. So what is a trusted leader? What is the difference between a manager and a trusted leader? Management has to do with getting things done, with objectives, with KPIs, and leadership is behaving in a way that people want to follow you. And that's the core aspect of a trusted leader.
So for you mean, it is somebody, of course, who is, let's say, go show the people how they should act. So be a, let's say, a mentor or a kind of coach, and to build up then trust for them. So this is what you mean.
Yes, exactly. Because how you behave, when you separate managing and leading, as in to-do lists and behavior, it becomes logical that everybody can be their own leader. Then leadership behavior is something you can apply on very small teams. And then you can find out, what do I have to do to be perceived as trustworthy?
Yeah, Jan, before we go on with that topic, where is your passion coming for that topic? What is your background, just to understand where you are coming from?
Yes, I used to be creative director in corporate communications. I have worked for a lot of large and small companies, Unilever, Philips, Danone, and as a creative director, helping organizations to establish meaningful communications, and with everything you have, visuals, voice, text, words. So that's my background. And I've done this for over 20 years. And when you look back 20 years from today, or even 25 years from today, the corporate communications world was fundamentally different. There wasn't even internet. There were no smartphones. They were only on the surface from 2008. So establishing meaningful connections was a totally different game and a totally different craft. Today, well, let's cut in time. In 2015, I stopped being a creative director in corporate communications. And I started a new business, and I started a business because I was became fascinated about human behavior. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to stay true to creating meaningful connections in that sense. And I started a different company called the Persona Academy. And that focused on exactly that. Who is your customer and how does he behave? What's his motivation? And I used a sentence to describe what goes on between customers and companies. And the sentence that I used was, we say what we think, but we do what we feel.
Good point.
We say what we think, but we do what we feel. This is the sentence I used to explain why customers or colleagues at work do what they do. They say one thing and behave in a different way. And this little sentence fascinated me enormously. And the fact that in between what we say and what we do, there is trust. And 4 years ago, this core belief, that this core value of trust, sort of hit me really, really strong, and I knew this was actually what I was wanted to research and investigate and see how I can get some grip on. So, and that's when the name of my company was born, as in Grip on Trust.
So let's say, to just repeat what you said in different words, so it is very important for you, and let's say should be very important for any trusted leader, to say you be more honest to the people, so to environment, work with empathy in this way, and leave, let's say, a bit more professionality behind, and looking more, let's say, on your surroundings as a human being, for example.
Yes. Well, what I did was I went to the internet to say, oh, okay, the trust is important. So how does it work? And yeah. And then you have not that many books or not that many thinkers. I mean, when you count everyone that's really someone in the area of trust, you get to maybe 40 or 50. And in a large research area, and in a topic that's important as this, that is really not that much or that many. If you when you look up people that had something to say about leadership or management, there are thousands of books.
Of books and management, and I could agree.
So there is no real core understanding on what is trust and how does it work, and how can you apply it in leadership. And when I found that, being a designer, having a designer's background, I started to collect all the core elements that were important to me, and I designed my own model, the 360 degrees trust model, to help me actually to understand how trust works, but also make it actionable, because that's the core. That's the next step I wanted to make, because you can read up on the ideas about trust from someone else, but as a manager, as someone in a leadership position, you really need to make it actionable, because otherwise you have these words like empathy and like reliability, but how can you apply it in your day-to-day job? And that's where the model and the thinking came in.
But it sounds like a long journey. Or if, let's say, if I don't know, the typical situation in a small or mid-sized organization is you probably have people who are, I don't know, being part of the department, becoming a team leader, becoming a group leader, so they grow in the organization, and they, how to say, yeah, how to the transfer to just to be a manager, to be a leadership, to be a trusted leadership. Is it, let's say, is it something what you then do trainings or do, mm-hmm. How is this working?
And also, is it linked also to the mindset themselves? Is also maybe a question to make the change.
I want to be a manager, but could every manager be a trusted leader? Well, true. Probably not. I don't know.
Probably not.
Yes. Well, you do. What I found was that 60% of first-time managers, people that become managers for the first time in their careers, 60% of first-time managers fail within 18 months.
Wow. Okay.
That's research I came across when I was writing my book. There are a couple of elements that are important here. Is that a lot of people become a manager because they're good in their job, and when you're good in your job, you get to lead a team. But quite often, you have no idea how to manage a team, because being good in your job has nothing to do with managing others. So all of a sudden is how you behave becomes extremely important. But that's not the targets you are being given from your managers, because you still have to get your KPIs, you have to meet your objectives. So you talk in that way to your people, but they might not respect you as a first-time manager at all.
Yeah. Yes, so, and this is, sorry that I interrupt you, but just a comment in case of what you said. Yes, we have a lot of stuff, a lot of books to read, but nobody is really training you to be a leader. You can just look on the people around you and to adapt what they are doing and do your best to be a good leader. And that's the point, because if nobody can really 100% train you, or share to you experience from a good leader or a trusted leader, about 15 years, just to share it to you. This is a very hard part.
I guess we all know these. Jan, like you mentioned, you I don't know, because you were good in a job, you get the, I don't know, department leader, but that does not mean that become a leader, because you're probably the technical expert. But are you able to, motivate people, to connect people, to develop the network, whatever is needed in our business?
So this is an important realization, and it was for me as well. And so you need people skills. So you need people skills to be a better manager. But when you are in a company that you become the first time manager for the first time in your career, the people you need to manage don't want to be managed by you, because they want autonomy. They want guidelines, what you expect of them, and they don't want you to sit watch over their shoulders and say you're doing this wrong or you're doing that wrong, because everybody hates that. The first thing that make people leave companies is too much micromanagement. When you start being of doing micromanagement as a first-time leader, that's the sure way out of the door. That's the worst thing you can do. But a lot of first-time managers do that. And also, what's is mentioned in the research is that maybe the first couple of weeks, senior management wants to give you some kind of leeway because you are new in your job. But after a couple of weeks, you have to perform, you have to deliver, and they don't hold your hand anymore and help you be a better leader. And they haven't made a distinction between leadership and management. They simply want you to perform. So you're on your own, and that feeling of being on your own is what a lot of first-time managers give back. No support from senior management. So there you are. You're good in your job. Yeah. You are promoted to being a manager. You have no idea how to manage, and you get pressure from senior management. And the people you are supposed to manage don't want to be managed by you. And that's a very difficult cocktail. So how does the principle of trust help you through this? That was one of the main questions for me. And I have discovered six principles of trust. The first three are strictly relational, and the second three have more to do with the context of a relationship. So the first three are character, competence, and consistent behavior. So character is very much who are you as a person? Where do you want to go? Do you respect me? The second one is competence. Are you able to do your job? I mean, when you are colorblind, you're not the right person to do the color management of a large color printing.
Yeah, probably not.
True, not the best way to do.
So that's capacities. Then you talk about experience, but also you can have all the capacities and the experience, but when your quality level is not that high, people relate to you differently. So that's competence and consistent behavior. Consistent behavior is closest to we say what we think, but we do what we feel. So consistent behavior is taking accountability for your actions. Is about communicating clearly, clarity in communications.
Is it this only, or is it also the topic that you are, I probably could use a German phrase, but today I'm going in that direction, tomorrow I'm going in the other direction.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, consistency in leadership. When you have a leader in what kind of shape or form, and on Monday this is his
attitude
his goals or targets, and a week later he wants something else as the most important thing in the company. That's really confusing. And the thing is, people stop taking initiative or action when you have managers like that.
Jan, would you say, of course, in the future you can? It is more important to have the right soft skills in line or hard skills. So it means, let's say, empathy and the right attitude, the right mindset against, let's say, knowledge or let's say the information you need for your the theoretical information for your job, or is it more, let's say, we the people interact. So social skills. What do you think?
When you look at the corporate dynamics of today, the problems companies are facing today cannot be solved with technology or hard skills. Almost all companies struggle with finding the right people, finding enough people, finding people that actually want to work at your company and staying there. That's a huge problem. That's a huge problem. So what happens next is it creates an enormous pressure on everybody else that still is in the company. And from the top, we get the objectives to grow. So you have less people, and still you want to grow. So you have to do more with less people. So how are you going to manage this? Are you going to manage this by standing next to your people with a stick or with a whip and they say, you have to work harder. You have to do more.
Under pressure.
Yes. So if you need to do more with the same people, you have to have some kind of lubrication or oil to oil the relationships. Because when people are afraid, they stop taking initiative and they stop telling you, giving you the right information you need to lead a company. So people actually, you have to behave in a way that people actually want to give you the information, want to collaborate and cooperate with others. And you can only do this when they are excited with your mission and want to create a sort of a team spirit to do more together. And you can you can compare it with a soccer team, with a football team. If you have 11 players that not really want to shoot the ball to each other, it's really, really very hard to win the game.
Is this a principle for every organization, or do you say no? It's working in the creative design office, I don't know, department, but not very good in productive. Or it is. Do you see any differences for different industries, or is it something? Is it a principle which is
very the same? You mean? Yeah. Do you mean?
It's about how we treat humans. How you relate to humans. And one of the aspects I found in researching the aspects of trust is intent. When you are in a leadership position and you clearly say where you want to go, what is your ambition, what is your drive, where do you want to end up, and then you say what you need of people, it motivates much more than when you only say what you need of people. If you say we need 25 cylinders and we need them tomorrow, and they have to be from tungsten steel and whatever, start working. People say, oh, okay, that's a new assignment. Maybe I need coffee first or whatever. But when listen, we have this job and this can be a very important client for us. Just have the motivational stuff in front of it. People
drive
want to work
them with
you.
Spirit.
So motivating and giving the intent why you need to do stuff is an extremely powerful trigger for people to follow you. And also, when the top leadership has a clear intent where they want to go with their company, and people in different layers, lower layers, are allowed or inspired to formulate their own intent for their department, it trickles down it energizes everyone.
So that another question to that brings me to that. Is it, let's say, when you help an organization to be become trusted leaders? And is it, where do you start? Is it that, is it a top down, or is it do you start with the what is the MDs, with the management, or do you say, no, you know what, we start with a department leader, go then to the, I don't know, site leader. Is it a top down or bottom up? Is
the right word, I guess? That was also my last question.
What I found, I have six principles, and every principle is built up of four aspects. So 24 aspects in total. When you apply them all, it has a very strong effect. But when you only apply two or three, it already has an effect. And when you start within your team, a lower level team, it has an effect on that team. And when it's ideal to start from the top, but you don't have to. I am training a company right now, a group of six people, and I was really amazed to find out. Last Friday I was on session number three, and when I started, they shared voluntarily all the different things they do in behaving, in relating to each other, and how it already changed their lives. So this and it's showing up on time in the meeting, describing their intent when they want something else from someone. So the little light bulb moments already resonate from simply two sessions and within this small group of people. So that's really, really powerful. It's realizing how your behavior influences others. That's the core instrument of trust.
Well, yeah, I guess we could extend these
hours and hours.
Yeah, it sounds very, very interesting. But I'm afraid we need to come to an end, unfortunately. So because it's talking with you gives me so many inspiration and say okay, yes. and looking in my I'm that now, old long career in the different areas and say okay, what did I wrong probably, what did my some other leader with me good or not,
and this is what I also thought, because of Ingo and myself are, let's say, we are responsible, let's say, for our teams. And of course we, always when we talk about this kind of topics, of course you think about yourself, what you did and what you're doing in the future, and I can just join Ingo's comment, I can talk about these topics hours and hours, because it's very important for us as well. Yeah.
For all people who now get interested in, we have in, let's say, in our notes and show notes, all the contact details, Jan, to you.
Yes.
If someone is interesting, I'm sure they would like to contact you.
We forgot one question at the beginning.
Oh, yes. No, we still need to ask.
Yes, Jan. One question, because of course, let's say in case of all what we're doing with our podcast, we're recording this stuff from our canteen, and we said, okay, canteen, this is an area where we come together, where we have, let's say, a chat, where we have coffee. We always ask for, let's say, if you have a funny canteen story, what happened, let's say, in your business life, if there was something you would say that was funny or interesting to tell.
A canteen story.
Yes.
Well, it could be a canteen, it could be a restaurant, but we in our canteen, especially when you are with guests, you have really funny situations sometimes. And yeah, we were wondering if our guests have something else that they, I don't know, what happened in the canteen to you, to colleagues, to you.
Or something in case of business dinner or something like this, or what happened on your end?
I used to be a smoker, and you were not allowed to smoke in your workplace, but you were allowed to smoke in the canteen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And,
okay.
I was stopped smoking, but I was thinking about this cigarettes or these cigarettes that I would demand from others.
Okay. Yeah.
During lunch break, that would trigger me in the morning. Oh my God! At 12 o'clock, there's this lunch break, and he is sitting next across to me, and I will ask a cigarette from him then and then. So I was a non-smoking smoker, looking forward to this crazy smoking moments in the canteen, and but. It's really a good thing that's not allowed anymore.
You still sometimes would like to smoke, or
no? I went to this hypnotherapist, and and he rewrote my smoking software. So now the urges are rewritten to something else.
Okay, so yeah, Jan. Okay. Many thanks for being with us and share with us your passion. I would say it feels like you are very passionate about the topic. Yeah.
This is what I was to say. Yeah.
I am happy to hear that it resonated with you as well. As to say, I do give in-house trainings for small teams, larger teams, and management, all management levels. So if you think this is something that would benefit you, just let me know, and we'll talk.
Okay. So Jan, many thanks.
Yes, my pleasure.
Thank you very much, Jan.
Yeah, and take care.
Thanks for your time. Okay. Have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.